This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Broadcasting from Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. So much to talk about today. This is Mr. Michael Dean. I've actually been listening to conservatives. Please forgive me. No, conservatives are okay. I'd rather live near them than liberals. We used to live by liberals in California. And actually, leftists. I like Ben Shapiro's definition of the difference between a leftist and a liberal. And I think that language can be important, although I don't think it should be enforced by law like they're trying to do in Canada, where you have to use the specific 2,700 government-mandated pronouns. You know, I have a friend who's a geneticist who said that, well, I said, are there really two genders? You know, because this guy's a DNA scientist who worked on the Human Genome Project, who knows a lot more about gender and sex than people who are screaming and getting legislation passed. And he said, well, there are three variations of male-female that occur genetically very rarely. I think the percentage is something like 0.3% of the time. Whereas, you know, a lot of people, like something like 20 to 30% of people are in some colleges are identifying as something, as other, you know, something other. And he said, well, okay, if you're one of those three things, you're not necessarily male or female. They're like, you know, one is male and female, one is something else, one is something else, that are rare genetic mutations. And he said, well, if we're going to have 28 genders or 68 genders or whatever, you know, the leftists claim, then we should have 7 billion or 8 billion or however many there are people. Because basically what he was saying is, yes, there is a physical thing that you can be that is not male or female that occurs in nature if you're a human, a Homo sapiens of the human persuasion of the human group, but it's so rare that it doesn't account for the what I consider mental illness or just overactive imagination. I think it's overactive imagination to think you're something that you're not. But I'm fine with that. I'm fine with people dressing up however they want and playing the games among their friends. But I'm not fine with the government mandating of language. I think that's absurd. There's a quote. Okay, so Ben Shapiro is a conservative I can actually listen to, because he's, you know, and a lot of my beliefs and values are in line with the conservatives. I think you should keep what you earn. I think you shouldn't have to support everyone else. But I think they get kind of nutty when they think things like, well, first of all, the war on drugs is just immoral. And it's so entrenched now, even though it's falling apart at the same time, it's so entrenched that largely liberals believe it too. I mean, liberals all think pot should be legal. A lot of them think pot should be legal, but they think, I mean, I've interviewed people who run a medical marijuana distributor when it was medical only in Colorado before it was legal everywhere in Colorado. And over, they said things like, yeah, pot should be legal and taxed, and the tax money should be used to hire extra police to go after the people doing meth. That's not an honest or it's not a consistent belief. You know, it basically says my things are okay, your things aren't. And a lot of conservatives believe things like my things are okay, your things aren't. But Ben Shapiro is consistent, and I like that about him. I saw him speaking at Yale University in a YouTube video. You can Google it. It's the one with him that has bad audio, because so nobody at Yale and nobody in his camp put a 50-cent foam windscreen on the microphone. And people who speak publicly a lot should buy those things and carry them with them. Another thing you can do is roll off the the bottom end, you know, the below 100 hertz, below the things that are in human voice. If you're recording human voice only, yeah, get rid of the things that aren't in the human voice, because all you're going to get is the pops. There, I did that intentionally. And the, you know, truck going by out on the street and somebody tapping their foot on the floor in the audience, going through the floor.
Hey, I saw your t-shirt from across the room. That's pretty cool.
Thanks. I looked all over for t-shirts with designs and sayings that define my unique taste, and I finally found it.
Who makes them?
Wormshirts.com.
Wormshirts.com?
Yeah, Wormshirts.com.
That's weird. Why'd they call it Wormshirts.com?
Probably because Wormshirts.com is easy to remember. Worm, like the critter that crawls on the ground, and shirts, like what they are, t-shirts.
Wormshirts.com. Cool. Do they make them for women?
Yeah, they have men's, women's, and children's styles, a bunch of colors, and all sizes, and they're quality cotton shirts.
I'll look up Wormshirts.com right now on my phone and check it out. Wow, they have lots of designs. I've never seen any shirts like these.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Hey, let's get out of here. We'll go over to my place and I'll order some shirts on Wormshirts.com. Then when they arrive, I'll try them on for you.
Worms!
That's Wormshirts.com.
But he said that, you know, someone asked him, what do you think of Colin Kaepernick? I don't know. I can't say it. I don't follow sports, and I generally don't follow whatever the latest thing is the left and right are screeching about each other over. I mean, the left joining that too. He said, for instance, and this is why I think he's consistent, is he said that he thinks that he said Colin Kaepernick, well, depending, I mean, I agree with this part, that it depends on what the contract says. You know, if somebody contracts to do and behave in a certain way for any amount of money and they've agreed to do it and they don't do it, then the person on the other end of the contract has the right to, you know, stop the agreement. And so I don't know what that is. He doesn't know what that is. But, you know, the moral issue, if there's really not a moral issue, the moral issue is, and Ben Shapiro said, yes, he should be able to remain playing in the NFL, and people should be free to scream at him from the stands and hope that he gets sacked every game. That's free speech. And this is a guy who believes deeply and dearly in the cloth that is the flag of the nation and believes it is sacred in some ways, but doesn't believe that there should be special rules. Like, a lot of times conservatives and liberals will say, I believe in free speech, although more and more the leftists, as Shapiro says, the leftists are screaming that free speech isn't fair and there shouldn't be free speech. But a lot of times conservatives believe things that they believe strongly but have exceptions for. You know, they believe free speech. They believe in the Constitution. They believe in the amendments. A lot of times when people say they believe in the Constitution, they mean they believe in the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of it. And often they can't name them and haven't read them and largely concentrate on the Second Amendment and maybe the First Amendment. Although more and more conservatives are saying, yes, there should be the right to bear arms, but we need reasonable we. Whenever someone says we need, and they're not talking, and they're talking outside their family or their friends or the rock band, when people say we need, they are frequently saying we need the government to point guns at people's heads and throw them in cages if they don't do what we think is right. And there shouldn't be anyone, morally, there shouldn't be anyone able to throw anyone in a cage or point a gun at their head for anything other than defense of property or persons. You know, the only actual crimes are crimes where there's a victim, you know, robbery, theft, fraud. And fraud, I heard a great definition of the other day. Fraud is theft with a handshake or theft with a smile. That was it. Fraud is theft with a smile. You know, fraud should be illegal. Crime, rape, murder, assault. You know, any of those things should be absolutely illegal and should result in a penalty. Although I'd like to see more and more the penalty, including some kind of remuneration, some kind of amends for the victim. Whereas, you know, a lot of times now there isn't. Like I said on a previous episode that I think if someone, you know, beats you and robs you, they should be forced to be your slave for a certain amount of time. They should be forced to, you know, do your bidding. And there could, you know, you probably wouldn't want to deal with them. So there could be intermediary organizations, you know, slaveco.com or something that would don't look that up. I don't know if that's real. That's just an example. But, you know, somebody who enforces that. Whereas now there's this huge bloated bureaucracy of the so-called justice system that basically just leads to putting people, including good people, through a grist mill and grinding them into paste and taking all their money to, you know, to have jobs for police and courts and judges and jailers, especially jailers. And, you know, in my utopia, there would be courts and judges and jailers, but they wouldn't be so busy chasing people for victimless crimes that there are stacks of rape kits that are unanalyzed, for instance. So Shapiro, you know, basically is consistent. Even though he believes deeply in the flag, he doesn't believe that, he doesn't agree with, for instance, Trump, who says, yes, this is a criminal act, or people who think that there should be a law against burning a flag that you own on private property. It's inconsistent with the Constitution that people claim to love to say that you can't burn a flag on your private property or even on public property. You can't burn someone else's flag because that's theft and destruction of property. And the left often doesn't even see a difference between that. Like the, a lot of times what happens is these days is people are convinced, people in power convince people with no power that the way to get some power is to destroy the whole system and burn it to the ground. And I disagree with that strongly. And it's an appealing idea to young males with no money, especially. This is something that another guy that I don't agree with 100%, but I agree with about 95% said, Jordan Peterson. You should look up Jordan Peterson. He's an academic from Canada who is, among other things, been in trouble with the law for refusing to refer to his students by the 69+3 approved genders or whatever it is. And he raises a really good point about that. Like, these things are painted in a way of it's about sexuality or it's about gender or it's about gay rights or it's about Christianity, when really the consistent person will boil this all down to property rights. So on my property, I have the right to do what I want as long as I'm not aggressing on somebody and they're invited there. You know, I can't kidnap someone and take them to my property. Slavery is immoral, but in a public space, you shouldn't have to refer to somebody by some convoluted system that someone invented that's basically as legitimate as trying to enforce the rules of Dungeons and Dragons in society. And this is very unpopular speech that I'm saying. There are people who would want to kill me for this, just like there are people who want to kill Sarah Sanderson Huckabee or whatever her name is for, you know, leaving a restaurant after people yelled at her for being there, which I think that those liberals, those leftists, excuse me. And the difference is some liberals believe what good liberals used to believe. Things like, I don't agree with you, sir, but I will defend your right to the death for it. That is a classic liberal belief. Liberals used to be fiercely anti-war, you know, I don't think that it's ethical to be a pacifist, but I think it's ethical to not attack people who have not attacked you. I think that most wars the United States has been involved in have been unethical. Yeah, I mean, I strive for consistency and I am attracted to the minds of people who have consistency. And I tend to run away from or block people who don't have consistency. Now, a problem with that is the left, and as I was going to say, Shapiro's definition of the left is people who believe that equality of outcome is as important as equality of opportunity. And what that means is, yes, everyone should have equal opportunities, but that doesn't mean that you should take the kid with the low IQ who's of a person of color over the person with a high IQ who's trying to get into a college or get a scholarship. That's racism. That's clear and simple racism. People say it's reverse racism, it's undoing racism, but it is racism in its own right. People should be judged by their merits, not by the color of their skin or their race, you know, their ethnic identity, their sexual identity, etc. And it seems like the leftists to separate them from the liberals. And I'm going to try to correct myself when I say liberals now and mean leftists, although more and more liberals are leftists than used to be. A higher percentage of liberals are now leftists who don't even understand any of the basics of human rights and of property. Like, for instance, anybody should be able to keep anybody out of their business. You don't need a law to take care of that. That business will go out of business. The free market will take care of that. Now, there are people who abuse the free market who do what's called crapitalism as opposed to capitalism, which is good. Crapitalism is bad. Crapitalism is rigging the game. And I don't mean just because you came from a good neighborhood and know certain people or whatever. That's an outcome of the 80-20 rule. You know, the rule of systems where 20% of the people, for instance, have more of the money than 80% of the people, but 20% of the people produce more of the goods than 80% of the people. For instance, I mean, that's almost a universal rule. 20% of your customers when you have a business will cause 80% of the complaints. It's kind of a rule of physics, and it's leftists want to deny physics and laws of nature. Leftists believe, I believe that everyone should have an equal opportunity, but leftists believe everyone should have an equal outcome. And it's a very toxic belief. It's a belief of the game should be rigged again, far outweighing the inherent small problems of the system to destroy people who have. You don't make an equitable society by destroying the producers, by destroying the people that have drive and will and intelligence to create things. You end up with the Soviet Union at best and North Korea at worst, or Venezuela. You know, when you send the army in to the Montgomery Wards or whatever the Walmart in some country or the stores in some country, the big box stores, and say, okay, your glorious leader has determined today, like they did in Venezuela. Well, did until everyone, they used to send the army a few years ago, Venezuela, the army, the president was sending the army to go to big box stores and say, point guns at the owners of the store and give everyone a free TV. And people loved the president for that. And now a few years later, like, those stores are out of business because they can't reorder things. No one's going to send them. No one's going to give them credit. They have no reason to stay in business if they're going to be robbed by the government every day, like a gang of criminals. And all governments are gangs of criminals, but just some are more criminal than others. And like, that is rigging the game to the extreme. Now, if you think about ways that the game is rigged in less extremes, but still obvious ways, like a common example would be if you believe there should be something like eminent domain, where a government can go in and take part of your land or all of your land to build a highway, you know, something that is for the greater good. That's in the Constitution. I don't agree with it. I think it's theft. But even if you believe that that's reasonable, that, okay, we're putting through a highway, we have to go through a bunch of farms, we're going to pay people a fair market rate for the back lots of their farms. It's, first of all, they never pay a fair market rate. And they don't take into account the earning potential of that land. You know, they may take into account what, you know, 200 acres of undeveloped land would be worth in that area at the lowest possible price. But they don't take into account that it's part of a farm and that somebody is producing and has built up a farm and built up with the sweat of their brow over the years, maybe even over the decades or centuries with their family. You know, they never give the worth of that. And even if they did, like, even if you believe that's a good thing, and also all the roads are built, you know, people always say, without the government, who'd build the roads? I say, not the mafia, because roads are generally built with, you know, back east, sometimes literally with the mafia or by the mafia. And at best, usually with some kind of connection that's not necessarily the lowest bidder. Either the lowest bidder who does a horrible job and they don't factor that in, or not the lowest bidder And there might be a lower bidder who'd do a better job, but it goes to the brother-in-law of the sister of a state congressman or something like that, or a federal congressman. That happens all the time. And so the roads are already built. They need to be maintained. Who would maintain them? Walmart. And people say, that's crazy. You know, if the roads were privatized, there'd be tolls so high, no one would be able to get anywhere. No, Walmart and big box stores would get together and pay to maintain those stores so people can get to their businesses and so their trucks can get from the interstate and from other states to and from the ports, you know, where things are brought in from China to sell to you, because without you going to their store, they don't have a business. Anyway, but even if you think eminent domain is ethical, if it should be there, it's in the Constitution, you believe that's an immutable document, it's very largely abused. The president of the United States has abused it. Trump wanted to build a casino in New Jersey and needed to tear down some people's houses to do it. Actually got most of the houses torn down, built the casino, wanted to tear down some more people's houses that had people living in them to build a parking lot. And a lot of people took the offer. You know, it actually got better than market rate. And there was a little old lady who didn't want to move. She didn't care about the money. She wanted to live. She'd lived there for 60 years. Her husband and her had lived there. Actually, the smart thing would have been to do maybe for Trump to like move the house physically somewhere. But he didn't even do that. He just took her to court and tried to crush her. And this is the kind of thing of like rigging the game of where, you know, people that have political connections that dine and play golf with judges, not necessarily saying that's what Trump did, but where people can rig the game in a way that's absolutely unfair. That's absolutely unfair. Kicking a little old lady out of her house who doesn't want to go to build a parking lot on what's private and public lot, you know, property, that's rigging the game. So if you could eliminate that kind of rigging the game and there was a true free market everywhere, then everyone would have an equal opportunity, but not necessarily an equal outcome. Like leftists want an equal outcome. Leftists say, you know, this kid from the inner city who didn't have a good upbringing, who had to, you know, dodge bullets coming home from his school, that even if he has an IQ of 90, he should get the slot into Harvard or Yale over the kid who has an IQ of 130 who's white. That is trying to rig the outcome. It's trying to equalize the outcome, not trying to equalize the playing field. And equalizing the playing field is good in the sense of removing unfair impediments. And that's the definition of like unfair is the problem that leftists stretch their imagination on. To them, not calling them the proper pronoun is unfair. To them, not baking the cake, you know, if you're a Christian who doesn't want to bake a cake for a gay couple, is not fair. And again, I will say, don't ever try to force anybody by law to prepare food for you, because I've worked in fast food and seen what people do to the food of people who are rude to them. Yeah, don't ever try to force people to do things for you, to accept your business. It's immoral. But even if you think it's moral and you want to do it, I'd recommend you don't do it with food servers. Like Sarah Huckabee Sanderson, Mannheim steamroller, whatever her name is, you know, got kicked out of a restaurant recently. And it was kind of creepy the way they did it. Like she went into this restaurant, little farm to table restaurant in Virginia with like 15 seats or something, you know, six tables. I don't know what it was. Small restaurant, family run restaurant. She went in and sat down. The owner of the restaurant was at home, and her workers recognized this. Oh, no, it's this Republican speaker for the president. We have to do something. And they called the boss, and the boss basically said, start serving her and take her order, and I'll be there. And the boss got in the car and drove there, you know, wanted to kick them out personally, wanted to make a scene about it, and wanted to actually let them get hungrier and start noshing on some bread and taking drink orders, you know, like to inconvenience them more. And it's turned into this whole thing where half the country is screaming at the other half of the country. Actually, you know, 49% of the country are screaming at 49% of the country, and I'm in the other 2% who are just kind of eating popcorn and watching the whole thing. Although there is an outcome of this with the conversation getting louder and louder and screechier and people assaulting people at free speech rallies. It doesn't end well. You know, it doesn't behoove a country, a geographic location where people can live a happy life. You know, it leads to a location where there is civil war. And civil war is not pretty. And for anyone who sits around polishing their bayonet on their Mosin Nagant or their Armalite rifle, 223 rifle, whoever's, you know, sitting around like thinking, yes, we will fight against the... Here's the thing. If that was going to happen, you already would have done it because the line has been moved so many times that you can't even see the line anymore. And you'd also probably be doing it for other people. You know, if you're someone who laughs, you know, when someone gets busted for doing something you don't like having drugs, and you chuckle like, hey, they kicked in his door and took him to jail and hey, don't drop the soap, then you're part of the problem because you don't really believe in freedom and you're not consistent. You know, people who are consistent, Ron Paul is a really good example. Ron Paul is a good example of consistent. He is a conservative Christian who is appalled by the idea of homosexuality, but doesn't believe that the government should prevent homosexuals from getting married. He actually, his solution is that the government shouldn't be in the business of marriage, which I wholeheartedly agree with. You know, another example is, and this is probably why he's not president, because at a debate or an open mic or a town hall, as in one of the debates, Ron Paul was asked, are you in favor of legalizing heroin? It was the first question they asked him, and it was to knock him out of the running. And also, talk about being fair, being unfair. The Republican Party, the GOP specifically, made it so Ron Paul could not become president, even though he was having overwhelming support of young people. There were a lot more people. He was drawing thousands of people at speeches, at talks, and, you know, the other people that were getting higher ratings, according to the polls, were drawing 50 people, 60 people. The polls were rigged. The GOP changed their rules to circumvent democracy to prevent Ron Paul from being able to go in at the Florida convention, you know, and just like shut him out. And I wouldn't say this is unfair that they asked him about if he wants to legalize heroin, but I think it's kind of a cheap shot that was their first question to just taint everyone against him before he could talk about economic policy or anything. But really, whether or not to legalize heroin is economic policy. First of all, well, his answer was basically, I'd like to leave it up to the states, but the war on drugs does a lot more harm than drugs do. And he's a physician, and he says that as a physician. And I believe that he has some authority as a physician to be able to say that, to understand it better than some politician whose response, you know, most politicians from the left and the right who respond with emotions of, but heroin. So he basically said, yeah, it should be legal. The government shouldn't have any business in that. And he says, do I like it? No. Do I think it's good? No. But he strongly believed, and I agree with him, that government should not make rules like that. The war on drugs kills far more people than drugs do. You could look at the opiate crisis now of, oh no, there's an opiate crisis. Well, that's partly because Big Pharma, who have a very unfair advantage in the playing system, and they've rigged it that way to the point where they basically own senators and congresspeople, but they... But, you know, a lot of the opiate crisis is because it's illegal. And a lot more of it is probably because marijuana is illegal in a lot of places. And, you know, things like kratom, they're trying to make illegal. Like kratom is an herbal drug that has a lot of the properties, painkilling properties of opiates, but is far less addictive. But it grows as a plant. So they can't easily... Well, I mean, opiates grow as a plant too, but they don't grow in America, whereas kratom can grow in the South. Marijuana can grow anywhere that anything can grow, marijuana can grow. I mean, it's called weed because it's a weed, and pharmaceutical companies don't like that it does. It does so many things, including pain killing, without being addictive like opiates are, but there's not as much profit in it. for the drug companies, because anybody can grow it. And actually, a lot of companies that are not pharmaceutical companies are stepping in right now and kind of monopolizing it, which I think it's a good thing that it's freely available. But the companies that have monopolies on it are people who have an unfair advantage because, you know, just all of the wheeling and dealing that goes on behind the scenes in politics, that basically, if you need permission from the government to do something, there's an unfair advantage. And those things are usually set up for people to maintain their advantage. The example my co-host Randy England always likes to use is hair cutting. When he was a kid, his mom used to take him to this lady in their neighborhood who was a good hair cutter, did the hair cutting in her kitchen, charged a lot less than a barber, and it was more fun. You didn't have to wait in line. She was cheery. You know, she'd bake cookies and it was a better deal in every way than going to a barber. Mom always said, don't tell anybody at school that you get your hair cut by her because she doesn't have a permit for it, a license. And Randy talks about the absurdity of that, of like, what can you really do? You know, why do you need a license to cut hair? My mother used to cut my hair. She did a good job. My mother also taught me to read before I went to kindergarten. I got to kindergarten and I could read, and I got bullied for being smart. Think about that. Think about that problem with the existence of public schools. You know, the average IQ is about 100. In America, I think it's actually about 98 in America. It's higher in some countries and lower in some other countries. I have an IQ of 143, which is really, really, really smart, although I kind of don't probably utilize all of it all the time. But what is it? The Army says that anybody with an IQ under 86 cannot join the Army because there's nothing anyone under 86 can be trained to do in the Army that doesn't cause more trouble than it's worth. I mean, they can't carry a rifle. They can't safely carry a gun without shooting their fellow soldiers or officers or themselves in a foot. You know, they can't be trained to be quiet in the field. They can barely be trained to wash dishes. And I think dishes washing is probably reserved as a punishment in the military. In a lot of places, just contract it out now to people who probably end up, the companies that do it are probably charging more per dishwashing than a soldier gets paid a year. It's, you know, a lot of contracting's done like that. But so, yeah, Ron Paul was asked, do you believe in legalizing heroin? It was his first question at the debate. And he said, the short answer is yes. He gave a longer answer than that. And people were appalled. People are like, heroin, that's the worst thing I've ever heard of. And I think it's probably worse for you to smoke cigarettes in the long run. You know, I was a heroin addict for about 4 years in the late 80s and early 90s, been clean since 94. After that, I continued to smoke cigarettes and have smoked my whole life. And about 5 years ago, my lungs basically gave out, and now I'm on oxygen. And the long-term harm of tobacco for me was far worse than the long-term use of heroin. Now, you could say you didn't use heroin for 30 years, you used it for 4 years. You probably smoked a lot more because it's cheaper. You know, that's all true. But also a lot of people dying from heroin and from opiates now, from pills, are because they're illegal. For instance, they can't get a steady supply. They can't get a pure supply. It's adulterated. They have to do dangerous things to get it. They have to commit crimes to get it. I think England has the right idea on this. If you're going to put on your minarchist hat and have a government, I think the idea of legalizing heroin addicts, registering them, as they call it. I don't like the idea of registering anything. I think it's no one's business what you do. I don't think you should have to register your guns or your heroin addicts. But in England, they'll give heroin to heroin addicts, and it's pharmaceutically pure. It's medical grade. It's, you go to a place to do it. It's under, you know, you don't get a take home dose, but it's keeps them from getting sick to where they will do anything to get some. And that cuts down on crime. And that's a lot cheaper than incarcerating the people. And it's a lot cheaper and easier than sending a coroner out to pick them up. You know, it's just some office, like a free clinic type office somewhere with probably an armed guard and a nurse dispensing clean needles and alcohol wipes and cotton and pharmaceutical vials of heroin. That sounds insane to people, to conservatives and leftists and liberals alike. A lot of people are just like, that sounds like crazy talk. That sounds like you want to kill children. You know, that's how people look at it when they think of the children. But if you look at the economics of it, and really everything is economics, when you look at the economics of it, it's more economical for society. And it does not encourage use. You know, being on heroin all the time is not a fun thing. It's basically, there's a movie about it called Permanent Midnight. It's a book by Jerry Stahl. He's a guy that I interviewed in my Hubert Selby Jr. It'll Be Better Tomorrow movie, because he was friends with Selby. And the title of that book, Permanent Midnight, kind of sums up opiate addiction. Permanent Midnight. Like they say in Fight Club about insomnia, you're never really awake and you're never really asleep. And that becomes not fun real quick, whether you can get it or not. And people given options or not prevented from options can get off drugs. People that have no options have no reason to want to get off drugs because it alleviates the pain a little bit, and basically it gives them something to do. You know, chasing drugs is a full-time job. So basically, if it were freely available at Walmart, but not in the same aisle as the sugar to avoid confusion, the world would be a better place. It really would. And Ron Paul was asked that, and it destroyed his chances as president because, you know, 40 years of just say no and of drug war and of cops coming into schools and saying, drugs are bad, okay? And people don't think logically, they think emotionally, and they think they have a right to tell people what to do. And if you consistently believe that you have the right to, you know, own a gun, then somebody else should have the right to own drugs and use them in their home. And people who say things like, well, I have the right to guns, it's in the Constitution, people don't have the right to drugs, that's not consistent. Because why should something be illegal just because it's not in the Constitution? In fact, the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp, on marijuana paper. And there's a lot of uses for it too, like making paper, building cars, running, you know, the oil can heat houses, all sorts of things. But basically marijuana became illegal because William Randolph Hearst wanted a monopoly on forests of trees for wood production for papers. And hemp, which is marijuana, it's just marijuana has little to no THC in it. Hemp paper was a threat to his business because it was it's a lot easier to grow marijuana. It, you know, you can have three or four crops a year, whereas it takes 30 to 50 years to grow a tree you can harvest for paper. It's, you know, basically the ground is renewable and recyclable and it's economically better and all sorts of things. And powerful people who rig the game, who have money, do things like William Randolph Hearst, who owned pretty much every newspaper in the country at the time and owned a few congressmen and got Congress to run it through on a bunch of racial lies, you know, of, oh, it makes the black folk crazy and they rape white women. It makes the black folk crazy and they look at white women, you know, things like that. And a lot of these things are so entrenched and so many people make so much money at them that people don't want to get rid of them. Like police don't want to get rid of pot being illegal. And police unions have fought against this all across the country and have spent a lot of money against it, even though a majority of people think it should be legal or at least decriminalized or at least legal medically. And police don't care if your mother is dying of cancer. The police unions, there are probably police who care, but the police unions don't care if your mother or your grandmother is dying of cancer. The only thing that can allow her to eat and not be in extreme pain is marijuana gummies or whatever. They don't care about that. They care about keeping the status quo. And the status quo is with marijuana, cops can search anybody's car at any time. And cops like to be able to search anyone's car at any time. And the way they do that is, you know, they walk up to you and they can say they smell marijuana and then search your car. Or if they want to be more slick about it, they can call the drug dog. They can say, okay, we think you have drugs. We're going to hold you until the drug dog can get here, which may take an hour because he's out at the airport, may take 2 hours. Or you can let us search your car. And if you got nothing to hide, you should let us search it. Anytime someone says, if you have nothing to hide, you should give up some of your rights, that person is evil and you should not do what they say. In that case, I would probably ask the cop what their probable cause is and am I free to go? Those are pretty much the only magic words with police. Other than if you are arrested, I want to speak to an attorney, and that's all I'm going to say. So they want to be able to search people's car because they want to be able to find something on you, because they want to be able to arrest you, because they want to be able to put you in jail and bump up their arrest stats. It's not legal for there to be actual quotas now, but there are quotas. They're just not, they don't write it down of you have to have this many or you lose your job. But if you don't have this many arrests, you don't stay a cop very long or you don't get promoted. And it's no longer about justice. It's about looking at everyone as the enemy. And especially now that a lot of cops, a lot of the older kind of peace officer policemen are being retired early or retiring out and being replaced with, you know, young guys with PTSD from who cut their teeth kicking in doors in Fallujah, you know, where there's no Bill of Rights for the Americans being there. Although there are laws of war, but they're broken all the time. And the U.S. shouldn't even be there. There's no reason for it. I believe in defense. That's not defense. That's offense. And, you know, the way you make more terrorists is you kick in people's doors and treat them all like criminals. There are ways to deal with that to prevent terrorism without doing that. I believe that bad guys should be got. That's a whole nother show. But if you have an attitude of bomb them back to the Stone Age and go in there and kick them around like the rag dolls and bomb wedding parties and kill 50 people to get one bad guy, that's how you make more terrorists. Because think about if somebody blew up your whole family at a wedding and you were the one survivor because you were late getting to the wedding, wouldn't you vow vengeance and be willing to risk your life to destroy whatever did that to you? You probably would. So that's how terrorists are made. And, you know, whenever you have a population of young men who are underemployed and bored, you have a recipe for disaster. And a lot of the reason that young men are underemployed or unemployed in that country and in America is because of their government and our government. A lot of it's because of governments, you know, because people say, oh, Afghanistan looks like a crap hole. And no, it looks like a crap hole because the United States has been bombing it and England has been, you know, pushing it around and other countries have been just treating it like a shooting gallery going back to Alexander the Great and every couple hundred years since then. You know, the United States should have stayed out of there after seeing what happened with Russia. You know, Russia had a pretty kick-butt military, Spetsnaz, and were not able to succeed there. Partially because Ronald Reagan created Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and then Al-Qaeda and then ISIS basically by arming those people with rocket-powered grenades to have a proxy war with Russia. You know, it's really true what they say about when goods flow across borders, bullets do not. If you allow free trade, you're less likely to have war. And that's, but it's kind of become like war is the trade now. It's not free trade, but it's war is the business. And, you know, presidents going back 70 years warned about the military-industrial complex. And that's the thing that we have now. And whenever you have entrenched, impenetrable, indomitable organizations that think they can last forever, you also have a recipe for disaster. When you have the old boys network going to the point where things that are so entrenched that they have to continue because too many people's jobs depend on it, that's a recipe for disaster. Having a military is a smart idea. Defending the people who live in your geographic area is a smart idea. Whether it's a public one, like a tax-funded military, or even better would be a private military. I'm going to talk about my views on whether there should be a government a little later in the show. But where you have a situation where economies are measured by things like if a Hellfire missile is fired on a goat farmer in Afghanistan because he's carrying a gun because he's defending his property, which people often do there, and they don't have concealed guns because they're carrying AK-47s, because you can get AK-47s there a lot easier than you can get handguns, and you often have to defend your land at a further distance. You know, if you see interlopers riding over the horizon, it's a rural situation, you can't wait for them to come up to you and aggress on you, because when you tell them to leave and fire a warning shot and they keep coming, they have a rifle also. People commonly carry rifles in Afghanistan and Iraq to defend their property, especially in Afghanistan. It's a lot more rural, a lot of it. And a lot of times the U.S. has such vague, unconstitutional kill orders where if they see a male between the ages of 12 and 30, you know, someone that visually looks like that from the eye in the sky, from the drone, they can kill them. They have the right, they have the legal, not they don't have the right, but they have the legal ability to kill them. And that's absolutely immoral, to just kill war age men because they're holding a rifle defending their own property. But when the U.S. sees that guy, blows him up with a Hellfire missile, and that Hellfire missile is worth $75,000, and at the end of the year they tally how many Hellfire missiles were used, and they have to make that many more to replace those, that looks like a bump in the economy. That looks like things doing well in the U.S. economy, in any economy. That's, I'm not picking on the U.S. I live here, so I'm more concerned about what happens here, and I know it a little better, and it's just less hidden. I mean, they've gotten really bold. The powers that be are doing things in public they used to do in private. They're fearless now. They basically know that the people won't revolt, so they do whatever they want, and they've just gotten bolder and bolder. And if things get to the point where people are a little more uppity and a little more Second Amendment, true meaning of the Second Amendment oriented, they'll just ensconce themselves. Congress will meet over a telescreen. No one will do public appearances. Town halls will be handpicked even more than they are, and or maybe just the people in the audience will be computer generated or done with some kind of movie magic even more than they are now. But yeah, they're not going to. The elites, being not just the people that are wealthy. You know, I think you could be wealthy. I think you can have $50 million, $100 million and be ethical. I don't think you can be a billionaire with a B necessarily and be ethical. Everybody else I've seen, a lot of them are leftists. It's weird though, in the billionaire camp, there's a lot of kind of libertarian leaning people like the Koch brothers. And I know the guy from PayPal was, Peter Thiel is, but when you get to that point, you're definitely, I believe you are cheating at some point to become a billionaire. So that's what I'm going to call the elites, the people who've cheated to become very wealthy. And I mean, I'm not saying that people who produce things and create and make jobs shouldn't be rewarded. And I don't think there should be a maximum wage or anything like some liberal leftists have called for. But I just look at everybody who's a billionaire or a multi-billionaire, and they're all dirty in some way. I'm Diogenes with my lantern looking for the one honest billionaire. Diogenes was a loon. Diogenes was a homeless person who walked around naked and screamed at animals and people. He was not really qualified to look for the one pure man. So when you've got this cheater economy where the billionaires are billionaires because they're doing things like the kind of fuzzy math. You know, it used to be people complain about the military and say like, well, they're spending $600 on a hammer and $1,200 on a toilet seat. And now the fuzzy math is that, but it's also things like if you blow up a goat herding teenage boy with an AK-47 in Afghanistan who has nothing to indicate that he's a threat to anybody other than that he's peacefully guarding his flock with an AK-47, which what would Jesus do? I mean, Jesus said, sell your coat for a sword. Arming yourself for defense against bad humans and hungry animals is not immoral. So that guy is basically practicing his God-given right to bear arms, and they blow him up with a Stinger missile, and $75,000 appears to have been created on paper, because you add all of those up and all the costs of the $600 toilet seats and $1,200 $5,000 toilet seats adjusted for inflation. When you have an economy that's based on killing strangers half a world away to buck up the bottom line, that's a problem. And that leads to really bad decisions that have blowback, where people hate your country and will do anything to destroy you. And that's not a winnable or tenable situation. Now, I'm not saying that everyone over there has the same values that Western people have. You know, when you have situations where you have children with AK-47s in an offensive way, not a defensive way, when you have parents strapping bombs to children, I mean, I would say those are not Western values. I would say those are not people who love their children, to quote somebody. But so I guess what I'm getting at with all that is, who would Jesus bomb? And if you want to be consistent, be consistent. If you believe in the values of the Bible, if you believe in the values of democracy, don't say, but we have to fill in the blank, violate the words of Christ and violate the Constitution because the newspaper owned by the military-industrial complex told me there's a threat that we have to deal with in this way. Don't get caught up in the jingoism, the kill everybody and let God sort them out mentality, because it's not really a true conservative value. I mean, a true conservative value is conserving life, conserving money, protecting what's yours, and you don't do that by destroying everything you disagree with. So that's all that. I want to talk a little bit about one other thing before we get to that other thing. That other thing is the death of the author. And before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about Cell 411. Cell 411 is a great free app that I use. I don't endorse anything I don't use, that you can download free for iPhone or Android from the respective locations where you get the apps for those things, the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store, and you can set up cells with people you know and love and trust, and they can contact you in an emergency with one push of a button, and you can contact them, and they get step-by-step directions, GPS directions to your location, and they can stream audio and video to you while you're driving there if there's something bad happening and they want a witness to it. And even if their phone gets taken away, even if your phone gets taken away, that video is saved on the Cell 411 servers. So, you know, if the cop who doesn't want to be filmed doing something bad, or the Antifa member who just wants to smash things they don't agree with, takes your phone, you still have the footage up to that point.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So, the death of the author is this interesting concept from some dead French guy. It's a concept from the 60s. Of course it's from the 60s, and it's French. It's an interesting thing, though, that I kind of like. It's an idea that the author of a book, the author of a text, and we're using the word text here to include anything creative. Like, it could be a book, it could be a podcast, it could be a musical performance, you know, a recording of a musical performance, it could be a film, any creative endeavor that a human mind can make. The author is dead as soon as they take their pen off it, or as soon as they publish it. As soon as the public has it, the author is dead. And what that means, you know, the author can still be walking around and writing more stuff, but as soon as he throws that message in a bottle out into the world, he no longer has control over it, in the sense that he doesn't really have influence on how it's perceived. And it's an interesting topic, and the examples I've heard given are, you know, beautiful medieval cathedrals. Like, no one knows the name of the architect who designed them, but they're beautiful works of art. And, you know, it's not the idea of the death of the author is not saying that the author is not important and shouldn't be celebrated or compensated, but it is saying that the author isn't important as soon as the thing's published. And it's a kind of interesting thought to me. I was watching this documentary about the group Kraftwerk, the pioneering German electronic group, who actually I heard a suggestion that they are the most influential group in the world. And I kind of believe it. And I know a lot about popular music. And everybody always says the Beatles are the most, you know, important band. And then later people say the Sex Pistols, you know. But really, the band that probably has had the most influence is Kraftwerk, because they were making electronic music in about 1970. They're actually still together. And you could trace a lot of kinds of music to them. I mean, not only to them, but they influenced hip hop, they influenced trance, they influenced all kinds of dance music, they influenced disco, they influenced rock and roll, they influenced the way all music is recorded now with computers. They embraced computers before most people had seen a computer. They used simple melodies that were sequencing with arpeggiators, you know, things that are like standard in all music now. They were the first people to do, or the first people to do well who sold records, because there were some pioneers before them, Stockhausen and people like that, who were doing minimalism and ambient works or 12-tone works or any of the various kinds of modern classical experimental music of the mid-20th century. But they really, they you know, what is it they say? Ford did not invent the car, but he put one in every carriage house. And Kraftwerk did not invent electronic music, but they made it something that people wanted. They made it palatable and good and listenable. A lot of older experimental music from the 20th century is not very listenable. So in this documentary, somebody used the term the death of the author in passing about Kraftwerk, saying that they encouraged the idea of the death of the author because they were, while there are a lot of pictures of them, they're very kind of a very posed and consciously created image that isn't really the people. They're wearing like 1920s business, German businessman suits and have their hair cut in that method. And a lot of people accused them of being fascist because it seemed like they were hearkening back to, you know, the good old days of, you know, what Nazis think were the good old days in Germany. But they aren't. And they're pretty vague about their politics, but they have said things in passing of like they don't like fascism. They don't believe in it. But they were also kind of nationalistic about, not necessarily nationalistic about Germany, but not ashamed of being from Germany. In the 60s, in the 70s, 1670, in the 70s and 80s, when they were really kind of taken off, or the 70s at least, which is really, it was still the 60s up to 75. I think decades stylistically tend to change over at the 5-year mark. The 60s kind of ended in 74, 75. The 70s kind of ended in, you know, 84. I think they go about four years into the next decade, generally, at least in my lifetime, and I'm 54. So in the 70s, bands in Europe were not singing in their native language. Like, you know, German bands were all singing in English because they were all imitating the Beatles and they were all imitating American black blues musicians. And Kraftwerk didn't have anything to do with that. They were imitating the sounds of machinery of the post-war industrial boom in Germany. And they were actually doing this thing that's kind of weird, was making fun of, kind of parodying this thing called Schlager music. And Schlager music is this sort of nationalistic pop music, not necessarily nationalistic, but a lot of nationalists like it. And it's something that's existed since the 60s and is still around. It's kind of like happy pop music with, you know, strong looking blonde women, pretty women singing happy songs that mention the names of cities in Germany and things about German life, and they're singing in German. And it was bizarre to people, even in Germany, that Kraftwerk were singing in German, but they were doing it kind of as a parody, but kind of also because they weren't ashamed of, well, not that they weren't ashamed of being German, but they weren't trying to pretend they were something else. And all of the German bands were largely, a lot of them were trying to imitate the Beatles or trying to imitate American and English rock music and American blues. The death of the author plays into this in that a lot of times they didn't even show a photograph of them, or if they did, it was kind of a parody of themselves. Or later, they actually replaced themselves with robots on stage for a song and then used that in videos and parodied the mechanics of the system. Like, you know, when people went to see a band with synthesizers, other bands with synthesizers like Emerson, Lake and Palmer, they wanted to see the huge bank of modular synthesizers that looked like old telephone operating systems with wires hanging out of them. That was like kind of the guitar equivalent of synthesizers, the macho guitar, you know, I have a pointy stick and I'm ruling the world with it, kind of a guitar histrionic mental attitude of, I'm trying not to say phallic here, but the it's radio. But the phallic nature of the guitar, you know, they were trying to imitate that. A lot other bands, you know, synthesizers bands wanted big synthesizers, and Kraftwerk were doing things like going little, like using a synthesizer built into a pocket calculator and repeating that it's I'm playing my little pocket calculator and doing everything kind of the opposite of what it was normal rock stardom. There's a saying I heard a more modern electronic musician, this guy goes by the name of Aphex Twin, said that he often posed on his record covers and for photos, like people could see a picture of what he looked like. And he kind of looked like a hippie with a gun, actually, in one picture. But he said it was unusual, and people in electronic music in the 90s and aughts didn't know what to make of it, because he said, yeah, you know, electronic musicians, they can't put a picture of them on the album cover. The band picture has to be a circuit board or something, which I've kind of parodied in my group Biptunia. When you look at the biptunia.com website, the top image is a circuit board with a cat superimposed on it. But Kraftwerk kind of invented that, of like, you don't play up the image of the singer, you know, of the band, to the point where people kind of didn't even know what Kraftwerk was. You know, was it a robot? Was it a person? Was it people? Was it one person? Was it, you know, somebody else in disguise? It could have been any of those things. And that's part of the death of the author too, is the, like, you can still put out the records, get paid for them, take credit for them, but kind of like, it doesn't really matter what your backstory is, you know. And now you can Google anybody, any artist you like, any writer, any singer, any performer, and find out more than they'd probably like you to know about them. But the death of the author is the concept that maybe that doesn't matter that much. I've kind of believed this to an extent too. Like, for an example, there's this band called Flipper. I really like Flipper. I liked them since the 80s. And when I moved to San Francisco in 86 to start playing music there, I was walking down the street one day and the singer in Flipper was wobbling out of the darkness in a trench coat, sweaty in the fog in the evening. And it kind of looked like a monster from a distance. And it got near me and it was like, hey, Michael, you want to buy some bass equipment? I got a bass guitar and an amp to sell. And I was like, I don't have any money, but thanks, Bruce. And, you know, I was just impressed that he knew my name. But, you know, the thing was, he was a junkie and he was trying to sell the tools of his trade to me. And then later, like, I know so many people who have been roommates with various people in Flipper, where Flipper has taken off with the rent money, that I actually thought about making a website called violatedbyflipper.com or cheatedbyflipper.com. I mean, these guys were well known for being criminal. And I still like the music. Like, that doesn't affect whether I like the music. So the death of the author, you know, it doesn't matter who does what in it. And actually, they were very into the death of the author, too, to the point where a kind of shtick that they would do was, their songs were great, but they're really simple, to the point where a lot of times during a show, they would hand the bass guitar to somebody in the audience, and then the bass player would go to the bar and drink. And eventually, they'd do that one instrument at a time until the whole band was at the bar drinking, and four other people from the audience were playing Flipper songs, probably almost as well as Flipper, on the stage. That's good death of the author. I'm into it. I mean, I don't mind going along for the ride and having my name go along for the ride and getting paid for it, but I kind of like that. I think it's something to kind of think about. It's the opposite of pop stardom. And again, it's not saying that the artist can't be important, but it's the opposite of a manufactured group where everybody cares who the thing is and what they're tweeting about and what they did and what their childhood was. And it doesn't really matter. The death of the author is the idea that the interpretation is done by the listener, by the reader, by the viewer, not by the person making the art. And I always put lyrics on everything I do because sometimes they can be hard to understand. I want people to know what I'm saying, but it's not that important to me that they have the effect that I want them to have. Like, a really good example is I wrote this song called, this funny song called Electric Cat Disco, which is kind of a dance tune. It's not the style of music I usually do. And somebody asked me the other day, like, what is this? Is this a joke? It sounds like, you know, I mean, I can tell you worked very hard on this, but are you serious? And I kind of felt like, does it matter? You know, why do you need to know that? I actually like the thing he said of it sounds like, you know, the theme song for a Saturday morning 1990 cartoon for kids. And I actually put that in the description of it because I kind of like that because it was confusing to a lot of people. But I kind of wonder if I even should have done that or even should have explained it. I just don't want to be one of these standoffish artists who is unapproachable and you can't ask them something. But I also don't want to let people believe they're owed an explanation, I guess would be the easiest way to say it. So death of the author, Google that, read about it. Jordan Peterson, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Google him and watch some of his videos. Jordan Peterson's amazing. Ben Shapiro. So here's the thing that I think I may have come to the conclusion of today is that I think I am not, I might not be an anarchist. I might be a deep minarchist, and I'm sure that there are people who are going to unsubscribe because I say that. And when I say anarchist, I'm not talking about the leftist variety. They're evil. I'm talking about voluntarist, anarcho-capitalist, which is generally how I describe myself. But I've really been thinking a lot about the Boston Tea Party thing, and he's a friend of mine and a writer who I really admire his works. Look him up, Boston Tea Party. Read his books. They're all great. I asked him one time, you know, are you an anarchist? He's like, I'm basically a very, very, very minarchist. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And he's like, well, he basically said there should be police and courts, but they should only deal with actual crimes, with actual harm, where there's an actual victim. And the usual voluntarist answer for that is some vague, amorphous thing about the free market, as if the free market is God that can make everything magically better. That the free market will take care of it. When you press them on, well, what does that mean for courts? Then they talk about ideas of, well, there'd be private courts and you could pick your arbitrator and both sides would agree on it. And Boston Tea Party's answer to that, which his question to that is, what happens when a person harms their neighbor and the harmed person, the victim, hires the private arbitrator to go over to send their bounty hunter or their process server to go tell the person that he must appear in court. And here's a list of five arbitrators we can agree, I'll agree on if you can pick the one you like. And the guy just says, no, get off my property and points guns at those people. What is the answer there? And I think that's a stalemate. And I don't have an answer yet for why that would work. I think that voluntarism would work if people were good. And I don't think everyone's good. And I think a lot of people who are not good think they are totally virtuous too. So that's the thing with sociopaths is they think that nothing they do is wrong. They think that the rules of society don't apply to them. So what do you do when you get a heavily armed sociopath in that totally voluntarist world who doesn't agree to go to your private court? I don't know what the answer for that is. I'm very interested in people who have an explanation. And I don't want you to just post a video. I don't want you to say, oh, here, watch this series. No, I want you to tell me in a couple paragraphs. I think it should be that simple. I think the outline of it should be that simple. Maybe it shouldn't be. But tell me in your own words how you think that would work in a free market. What would prevent the stalemate of somebody, person A harming person B hiring private courts and police, and person A saying, I don't recognize your authority and pointing a rifle at everybody. Get off my property. What would happen then? I don't know if there's an answer for it. I'd like to shoot for a voluntarist society for total peaceful non-government. And I'd probably settle for something like that, for the totally anarchist, except for courts and military that only deal with actual harms. Because I don't know what you do otherwise. There's not an answer for that. There's not a clear answer for that. I invite anybody to post on the Freedom Fiend site and give me an answer that isn't just, oh, the free market. I believe strongly in the free market, but I don't believe it works with people who are immoral and willing to violate your rights. So let me know how that would work, and then I'll discuss it next week. All good. Good talking to you. Hope some of this made sense. If it didn't, listen more or enjoy the free market of media and go elsewhere. But thank you for listening. We have a Patreon site. You can donate on Patreon. I do a bunch of stuff, not just this show. Check it out. Worms.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agrist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.